Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 40 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. We are on episode 40, but as everyone knows, 40 is the new 30, so we're feeling sprightly and young and ready to go out for the night. Or, yeah, we're ignoring all the wrinkles around our eyes because 40 is the new 30. But episode 40, happy March. I feel like this year is flying by now, don't you? I'm looking out my window in that there London and it's got blue skies and sunshine on the next building. The snow has gone, spring is in the air, and this month's interview is with the lovely Scottish author Jenny Frame, whose books have been tearing up the lesfic charts of late. But before we get to that, let's take a look at what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, and later we're going to touch on some nominations for this year's awards as the awards season and conference season is just gearing up to start. But first, the charts. Riding high as I record this on March 21st is MJ Duncan with her new book Heist. Now, I haven't read an MJ before, but they have been recommended to me, so I should get onto that, shouldn't I? This one is about Parker Ravenscroft. What a great character name that is. Full points in the character name game I so love. Parker Ravenscroft has a thing with Sheridan Sloane. Good alliteration. Parker, her life centres around helping her brother out of whatever hole he's in. But when Sheridan comes back into her life, a slow burn relationship goes from friendship to more. Can she juggle the two? The plot has international intrigue and is apparently edge of the seat stuff, although some reviewers weren't happy with the conclusion, but you can check it out for yourself and see what you think. Still in the US and UK top five is J.A. Armstrong's second book in her Open Tab series, and this one is called Cigar Club. Now, the cover is remarkably similar to the first book, and that's mainly because I'm guessing J.A. has worked out that a tumbler of whiskey and a cleavage have universal appeal. And let's face it, she's not wrong. Up again for the story is Fallon Foster. I have to say her name in that accent. Fallon Foster of Whiskey Springs, who's trying to make a go of her relationship with Riley Maine. But trouble is a-brewing in the Vermont town, with old flames passing through and family upheaval everywhere they turn. But whatever happens in Whiskey Springs, there's always time for a pint at Murphy's Law Bar, and I'm sure they drank gallons of green beer on St. Patrick's Day. Perennial favourite Jay has another book out also this month, and this one is named Just for Show. Now, it's a fake relationship drama, but Jay wins the character name of the month because her heroine is called Claire. Well done, Jay. You don't get many heroines called Claire to the pound. But anyway, Claire is a couples therapist who, after getting dumped at her engagement party, hires out-of-work actress Lana to play her girlfriend for a couple of months. She's got a book deal to complete, you see, and an image to upkeep. But can you guess what happens next, dear listener? Of course you can. They fall for each other. Cue violins and romance and love hearts. The old fake girlfriend trope is one I really do like. I've read a few books with that trope, and I'm sure this one by Jay is terrific because she's terrific. Natasha West, I recall, also did a really good one with fake girlfriend called The Plus One. I really enjoyed that. And I haven't written one, I've just realised, so I should get onto that, right? I will. Because it's always ripe for humour, I think, the fake girlfriend plot. But I'm still puzzling over the cover of Jay's book. It's a woman in a bridal dress wearing a roller boot. So if you can shed any light on that, let me know. Maybe they go to a roller disco. Are they still a thing? I think they are. They were a thing in the 80s. And the 80s are back. Cara Malone's A Cut Above is also doing well, this one focusing on Ivy Chan, whose destiny is to be the best neurosurgeon she can possibly be because her father demands it. She's focused on her goal until her head is turned by her study partner, Chloe Barnes, and things only get more complicated when they share a lip lock in the hospital changing rooms. I see Grey's Anatomy, I see ER, I see Scrubs, I see Passion. I love it. I love it already. Will Ivy and Chloe succumb? You have to read the book and find out. And finally today is Rescue Me by Lace Gardner and Saxon Bennett. And this is the story of Lucy Marshall, whose life goes into a tailspin when her girlfriend leaves her for her yoga teacher and her boss fires her. That's what you call a bad week. She heads off on retreat with her best friend Harriet, and the female-centric resort helps her remember the power of friendship and the power of love. You know, power of love is something Huey Lewis knows all about, and now Lucy Marshall does as well. I'm guessing this is a friends to lovers story. I haven't read it, but I'm sure you can guarantee with Lace and Saxon as the authors, it's going to be Bramajam packed full of laughs, because they do a good rom-com, those two. Chart for 2018, and whatever you're listening to or reading, I hope it is fabulous. But it's not all for the news in the world of lesfic this month, because as I said earlier, award season is kicking off. And so this year, the first nominations announced were for the 28th Lambda Literary Awards, which celebrate the best of LGBT literature around the globe. The awards are taking place in New York on June the 6th, hosted by Kate Clinton. And the full list of nominations are available at the Lambda website, but some UK hopefuls include former podcast guests Carrie Hunter for A Quiet Death, Andrea Bramall for The Last First Time, and A.E. Radley for Huntress. Good luck to all three of them nominated in the lesbian mystery category. Other well-known hopefuls in the lesbian romance category include Rachel Spangler for Close to Home, Aurora Ray for Crescent City Confidential, and Caris Walsh for You Make Me Tremble. Also, one of the awards is being presented by Kate Bornstein, who describes herself as gender non-conforming. And I remember reading Kate's autobiography 20-odd years ago when transsexual wasn't an everyday word, and I was absolutely spellbound by her honesty and her life story. So it's really great to see her popping up here presenting an award. So if you're in the New York area, well worth going to that. Diva magazine has also announced its awards. They're going to be 8th at London's swanky Waldorf Hotel. You can nominate your favourites now at the Diva website, which I think is diva.com. It's not just about literature, but also film, music, TV, celebrity, sport. But there is a best author category, so dash to the Diva website and put your nomination in now. And if that nomination should say Claire Lydon, then, you know, you've made my day. GCLS hasn't announced its nominations yet, but I should probably be reporting on those next month, I should think. If you're in the UK or even Europe, the final slot to keep free is for ELCON, which stands for European Lesfic Literary Conference. And this is taking place on April 23rd and 24th in Bristol in the UK's southwest. It's the first year of the conference, and it's aiming to be a European GCLS, promoting lesfic genre and giving authors and readers an opportunity to come together and talk books, process, plot, characters, and much more. So I'm really looking forward to this. I'm going along. I'm going to be leading a panel and taking part in a couple of others. Just put ELCON Bristol into Google, and it's ELCON, and I'm sure that the website will come up. I think it's elconmeet.org, but put it into Google. Tickets are £70, early bird £80, otherwise a veritable bargain. So that is all the news for the month. This month, tons of it, isn't there? So very quickly, what have I been up to? Well, I've been busy putting the finishing touches to my fourth book in my London romance series, The London of Us. This one focuses on Alice, who realises she's not so straight when she falls for Rachel, and then her life is turned upside down as the ramifications of that decision spread far and wide. I've just given the book out to a couple of early readers, and the response has been great, so I'm really pleased with that. But I'm pretty pleased with the book anyway. It won't be out till June because Audible have got to make the audiobook of it first, so we're releasing them all together in June, so a couple more months to wait for that one. I'm also putting together a box set of the first three books in the London romance series. That's London Calling, This London Love, and A Girl Called London. So if you haven't read the other three, look out for that. I'll be doing that in the next month or two. Plus, I have other books in the works, so it's all go at Claire Lydon HQ. Finally, in March, I also put out the fourth audiobook in a month. I've gone audio B. I put out an audiobook of my novel Twice in a Lifetime, and I'm really thrilled how this one went. Narrator TJ Richards was an absolute dream to work with, but most importantly, her voice is just divine, and an American narrating my novel just makes it sound way more cool, I think. But she's breathed new life into my story, so I hope you give it a listen, and I hope you enjoy. If you're listening to this, I assume you're an audiobook listener too. That's a lot for this month, so now it's over to the interview with the lovely Jenny Frame. I hope you enjoy. So joining me this month is hugely popular Scottish author Jenny Frame, whose recent books include Unexpected and Charming the Vicar. And Jenny has really hit the sweet spot in butch femme romance, and her books are raved about by her fans. Jenny lives in Motherwell with her wife Lou and their much beloved and well spoiled dog. So welcome, Jenny.
Hi, it's nice to be with you.
Great to have you here. So how are you today?
I'm doing okay, ready to go. Lots of writing this morning, but I'm ready to go now.
Good. So you've done your creative part for the day, and now you're on part two.
That's it. Yeah.
And all your fans, I'm sure, will be very happy to hear that you spent a morning writing. How many words did you get written this morning?
2,000 this morning. Oh. I'm trying to meet a deadline, so I'm trying to go really, really fast.
Right. 2,000 is a solid amount of words.
Yeah.
So paint a picture of me to me of where you're speaking to us from today. What can you see from where you are?
Well, I'm actually standing in my kitchen. This is where I write. I've got a spinal problem, so I'm not able to sit at a desk for any length of time. Uh-huh. And so I have to stand at my computer to write. And the desk in the office is quite low, but in the kitchen, the countertop is just the right size. And I've got everything I need here. I've got my Nespresso machine for my coffee to write.
Yeah.
And I've got a nice window to look out. And so I've got everything I need.
So you actually stand at the kitchen counter when you're writing?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. It's very on trend, that, isn't it? Because, standing up writing desks is much better for you.
Yeah, so they say. But I would love to be able to sit. I would love to, because I get really tired standing.
Yeah.
But I just can't sit at all. So
right.
I have to stand up.
Well, you see, you're doing the opposite of what everyone else does, because I keep thinking I should stand up to write or even do these podcasts. I should be standing up, right? But I can't, so because otherwise you wouldn't be able to hear my voice. So tell me a bit about your writing journey, Jenny, and how you got started.
Well, I started writing quite late in life, even though I've created stories for my own amusement as far back as I can remember. It never really occurred to me to write them down. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really encouraged at school, to be honest. It wasn't until I developed my really bad back problems about 8 or 9 years ago that life kind of changed for me. I went from working for the civil service 9 to 5 to lying down most of the day. Mm-hmm. And I really needed something to occupy my brain. Mm-hmm. And my time. I didn't know that either fanfic or lesfic existed at the time, but quite by chance I discovered fanfic online through Xena. I'd watched Xena a lot, and I found that online.
Yep.
And that then led me to lesfic, because a lot of the authors have come from the fanfic world to publishing, so I followed some of the names I knew to their publishers and just devoured everything I could. I thought maybe I could have a go at fanfic and see how it went, but I wasn't really sure if I would have the nerve to publish it, but I did, and then I got the writing bug, and I just haven't looked back since then.
Mm-hmm. So, and obviously, as you said, it's a well-worn path, isn't it? Writers going from fanfic to lesfic. So how did you make that bridge? Were you approached by, is it Boldstrokes, your publisher?
Yes, it's Boldstrokes.
Yeah.
No. I got to a point in my writing the online stories where I thought I really want to challenge myself and see if it's possible for me to be published. some of my favourite authors were from Bold Strokes, and that was really my dream publisher, if I could possibly choose one. So I submitted to them, and thankfully they wanted to publish it, and I was really delighted.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so you got accepted straight away.
Yeah, my first one, yeah.
Awesome.
Royal Romance, that was.
Yeah, well done. And then that was the start of the journey, and they've published all your books since then, have they?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Okay. So how would you describe your books to someone who's never read one?
I think you would call them traditional fairy tale romance, but with heaps and heaps of spice, I would say. You might pick up my books and think that they look quite maybe Mills and Boonsie sort of thing, but they're quite spicy as well. I like to do that. But they're very fairy tale romance, I would say.
Okay. Have you ever read any Mills and Boone in your time?
I'm sure I must have done when I was younger.
Yeah.
My mum was into all those sorts of books, so I'm sure I must have done.
Yeah. I'm sure I must have done as well, but I don't ever remember, you know, actually reading one. But at the London Book Fair last year, I went up to the Mills and Boons stand, mainly because there was lots of free wine on it. But and they were giving away free books. And I've actually got a Mills and Boon notepad right on my desk here. And I did say to them that they were missing a trick, not publishing LGBT romance. And they were quite interested in it. But so you never know, maybe one day we'll see a lesbian or gay or bi or trans Mills and Boone. That'd be quite something, wouldn't it?
It would certainly be a step forward. I'm sure a good portion of the readership would be open to it, certainly.
Oh yeah, absolutely, I think so, because it's not, as we know, it's not just lesbians who read lesfic, and it's no. So you know, yeah, they do cross over a lot more than people think.
Yeah, definitely.
So for this interview, you sent me a copy of Unexpected, which I really enjoyed, and I thought it was a very original story that I haven't seen anywhere else in lesfic, so well done for that. And a very interesting read. So the story is about Posh Becker, who has a son and a baby on the way, both conceived via egg donation, and her son finds the egg donor, the pair meet. So how did you come up with that plot line?
Well, I wanted to do a very simple standalone romance, but with a family theme. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me that I'd seen lots and lots of sperm donor meets woman, falls in love kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I thought it might be nice to give it a modern twist.
Yeah.
And make the donor meets woman. I think it gives the two women a link and a bond that brings them together, because they probably would never have met otherwise if it wasn't for that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Only if Becca had taken her car in for a service.
Yeah.
and I really like the slow burn romance of this one, because Dale really had to win over Becca's trust. And I thought you did that very well. So is there a trick to doing that kind of thing?
I think one of the things I've learned is just to try and keep things very simple, and just have the two characters listening to each other, really listening to each other, and through that gradually understand that this person and nobody else could be right for them. I think that's one of the key things.
Mm-hmm. Just keep it simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's probably very good advice, actually. yeah, and like you say, you really did take the trope of sort of egg sperm donor meets the egg donor and turn it on its head. And like I said at the beginning, butch femme is very pronounced in this book, which I was kind of surprised at, because I associate that more with US writers. So tell me a little bit about your decision to go with that, and is that something that runs through all your books?
Yes, they are all butch femme, but no two butch characters are alike, of course, because mm-hmm. there's a spectrum of women who identify that way.
Yeah,
it's just the way I write and my experience of being a lesbian. And one of the reasons I wanted to write fanfic originally was because I wanted to see more stories that represented who I was and who I loved, a femme that adores butch women.
Right.
And one of the most frustrating things as a reader I used to find with some, not all, but some stories would have a butch or masculine presenting woman, and by the end of the book somehow feminize them slightly or change them as if there was something wrong with them. And I wanted to write butch characters that were completely at ease with themselves and meet women who adored them for that.
Yeah, and I mean, are there any other UK writers that you know of who are doing butch femme stuff? Because I think it's a lot, it is, like I said, a lot less common, isn't it, I think, than US writers.
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. I think it's mostly the American writers that I know of.
Yeah, yeah. And who are your sort of favourites in who sort of write those kind of stories in the US?
I think Radcliffe and Ali Valley. They were the two writers that brought me from fanfic to published fiction, because they both wrote in the fanfic arena. Mm-hmm. And I really, I liked their characters, and they represented some of the people that I know and who I am, and things like that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on Radcliffe. She's excellent. All her books are very good. I haven't read Ali Valley, so I'll have to put her on my list. So with your books, you've been quite prolific since you were first published in 2015. And I think class, as well as butch femme, is quite a key issue in your books. And in Unexpected, we've got Posh Becker and hardworking Dale, who's new money. So again, is that a theme that runs through all your books?
I think it's another aspect to the opposites attract kind of theme that I like to do. I was brought up on costume dramas, Jane Austen's, Agatha Christie's, so
yeah.
I'm probably interested in class distinction because they're kind of ingrained in me a bit from growing up.
Yeah. And you're living in Motherwell, right?
Yes.
Which I have to say, I've only been to Edinburgh in Scotland, so I don't know it very well. But do you have any sort of Scottish castles around you that you thought, I wonder who lives in there, or did live in there?
Yes, I live right next door to a country house estate,
okay.
No longer with people in it, but it's a walking park for dogs and things like that. So I'm surrounded by history in this area, right through to Glasgow. You know, there's history everywhere, and that's always inspired me.
Yeah, well, that's great to have that on your doorstep. I can see where all your royal romances. That's a mouthful, isn't it? I can see where they all started now. And talking of those, so you've written a few books, A Royal Romance and Courting the Countess, where royalty fall for commoners. Were they great fun to write as well? Sort of obviously starting out on your doorstep.
Yes, they were great fun. In Royal Romance and Courting the Countess, I took the Countess and the Queen and tried to make them as different as you would expect them to be. So the Queen, Georgina, wears suits, dinner jackets, is a Royal Naval and Army officer.
Mm-hmm.
The Countess, Henrietta Knight, is muddy boots, baseball cap, ripped jeans, archaeologist.
Okay.
Not big dress and tiara type at all.
Yeah.
Just tried to make it a bit different.
Yeah. What did you think when Prince Harry announced he was marrying the commoner, Meghan Markle? Was that another story right there?
Yeah, well, the royal family are a constant source of inspiration. It's definitely something new. I suppose it'll young people and different members of the community will really enjoy having somebody different than an American in the royal family.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it's going to be a source of inspiration for many movies and books to come. And for your Royal Romance book, of course, that I think was that done before The Crown came out?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Okay. So how did you go about researching the royal background? Because I think people have have you seen The Crown?
Yes,
yeah, because I think a lot of people have, right? I know I have, so I've got a fixed image now of what it was like in my head. But how did you go about researching beforehand?
I started researching, I think, in about 2013, and I just threw myself into all the documentaries I could find. There have been a lot following the Queen around for the year, all the different castles, residencies, and there's a lot of information out there. Daily routines, royal tours, set up for banquets, and although it sounds quite boring, it's actually pretty interesting how they do things. And they live in a very insular world. Mm-hmm. The things that they do seem very normal to them, but to us look very odd. So it's kind of interesting to research that and find out some strange things that they think are very normal.
Yeah. What kind of things? Can you remember anything that stood out to you when you were researching it?
Well, one of the things, the Scottish Piper that plays below the Queen's window at 9 o'clock every morning as a wake-up call, even though she's already at her desk doing her work. It's a throwback from when Queen Victoria needed an alarm call at 9 o'clock. And so it's just carried on as a tradition, even though it doesn't really make sense anymore.
Oh, right. Well, it still happens today?
Yeah.
Goodness me. Imagine that. I'm glad that I'm not a big fan of bagpipes, so if I was next door, I'd be complaining, but I think they're far enough away from their neighbours, right?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, and as a Scottish person, I shouldn't say this, but I'm not a great fan myself.
Okay, good. At least I hadn't upset you. I remember being taken to the Edinburgh Tattoo when I was little and just frowning quite a lot, you know.
So, it's quite nice to see all when you go to the tattoo and you see all the marching and all the different things like that when it's in its place. But yeah. If it's just somebody waking you up every morning, I think
it would get annoying pretty quickly, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So your latest book, Charming the Vicar, did that one come out of, was it the royal one or Courting the Countess?
That was the Courting the Countess. Right. She appeared in the first book, and this was her. Okay. It's her own romance.
Right. So that one came out in January, and it features larger-than-life Vicar Bridget and her mission to turn an atheist, which is another plot I really like the sound of, and again employing your opposites attract. So tell me about the creating Bridget and the story, because she wears high heels and leather jackets, and she's very in your face.
Yeah. When I wrote Courting the Countess, I didn't really have an idea that she was going to have her own story. She just was as alive in my mind as the main characters were. Mm-hmm. I had this image of designer stiletto heels clattering down a cobbled village street and biker jacket and bright red lipstick.
Yep.
Just everything that you wouldn't think a vicar would be. I thought that would fit in with the village and the lesbian countess and everything just being a little bit different and more modern.
Mm-hmm. And what was the, I take it the fan reaction to Bridget was pretty strong, and so she got her own book, was that right?
Yes, yeah, I got a lot of nice messages about Bridget. She's very confident, speaks her mind, and is quite a funny character, so I think people really took to her.
Right, and is that based on anybody in near where you live, or is it just a figment of your imagination?
Well, just a figment of my imagination.
You don't have a lesbian vicar roaming the streets?
No, I have a lot of vicars and pastors in my family, but I don't have a female one, and certainly don't have a lesbian one.
Oh, you do? So you could, so that kind of bit of the plot was pretty easy to know.
Oh yeah, I've been brought up around a lot of religion and Church of England and the equivalent up here in Scotland. Religion's been a part of my life since I was small, so I was able to, you know, draw on that and know some of the background to what she would do each day and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, similar to you, I was brought up quite religious as well, and in the Catholic faith. I'm not practicing now, but I did know a lot of priests and sort of nuns when I was growing up, and they were all quite characters, I have to say.
I've heard that. My partner Lou was brought up Catholic, and she's told me some similar interesting tales about the nuns at school.
Yeah. They all. I went to a Catholic convent school, and all the nuns left when I arrived. I didn't know what to make of it, really. You know, my reputation preceded me, even at 11, clearly. And as we can hear from your lovely accent, you are Scottish. So are any of your books set there? And if not, do you have plans to do that?
Well, the last third of Royal Romance is set in Balmoral, Aberdeenshire.
Mm-hmm.
The royals go on their summer holidays. Right. It's a really beautiful part of the world, when it's not raining, of course, which isn't often. So I made full use of the beautiful lochs and craggy landscape there.
Yeah.
And then I had Dale and Unexpected, who was Glaswegian, and it was nice to get some Glaswegian phrases into the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. But any plans to set one of your a full book there?
Not as yet. I don't know why, I just tend to think in London-based stories and things like that, and England. I think it's, as I said, I was brought up in costume dramas and things like that, so that's where I tend to think my fairy tale romances are, but I'm sure it will come up in the future.
Okay, so you're sticking with your upstairs, downstairs for now.
Yeah.
I actually went to Keele University when I went to university, and I think that's where they filmed it, upstairs, downstairs, so... There you go, top tip. So as well as these romance stories, you've also tried your hand at paranormal with your Wolfpack books. So tell me a bit about that. Is that a nice change of pace, or do they have a bit of romance in them as well?
They're completely loved up romances.
Okay.
Exactly the same as the other ones. I don't really see them as different, apart from the characters are just put into a different world, but romance is definitely at the heart of it.
Okay.
I don't think I could write anything without romance in it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, paranormal romance is all the rage at the moment. I was at a writing conference recently and was told that, so you're bang on trend with that as well.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And your books are also doing... I've just bought out a load of books in audio, and I know that your books have come out in audio as well and are being very well received. So were you happy with the narration of those books?
Yeah, Bold Strokes have paired me with a fabulous narrator, Nicola Victoria Vincent, and she just seems to hit the nail on the head with my characters, and she really brings them to life, especially in the Court and the Countess series with all the village characters, in Axdale is the village, and she really does bring them to life. It's wonderful for me to listen to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed it.
Cool. So you're not shy about listening to your narration?
No. Although I do tend to skip over the slightly spicy bits. For some reason, I can't listen to that.
I know, when I was sort of QAing my latest audiobook, I was walking around town and the sex scene came on. I felt a little bit embarrassed, I must admit. But yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it, hearing it piped into your ears?
Very weird. When you're writing it, it's completely different. You know, you're getting to the end of the scene, but when you hear somebody else's voice saying it, you're like, oh no.
So and I saw from your bio, you've done a little performance in your time as well. Were you tempted to record them yourself?
Oh no. I think maybe my accent might be a little bit broad for some, I don't know. I enjoy doing readings and for a few pages on YouTube and things like that, but narration really is an art in itself, and it's really hard to do. I think I'll leave that to the experts.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I always say as well. I mean, I've done like a 10-15 minute recording, and it's really exhausting as well. Like, you really have to concentrate and sort of be upbeat.
Yeah, it's really hard work. When I've done a few readings just on YouTube, just a few pages, and it's been such hard work. I really don't think I could do a whole book.
No, me either. I'll leave it to the pros. So you've hit royalty, you've hit vicars, countesses, wolves. So what is next for you?
Well, I've got vampires coming April 1st. It's my new vampire book, Hunger for You, and then I've got my second Wolfgang book on August 1st, and then in January, my third Royal Romance book. So it's more of the same for about the next year. And then I'll probably have a new standalone romance after that, but I'm not sure what that will be yet.
Okay, so you really are going for it. You do this full time, right?
Yeah, I work every day. Yeah. Full time on it, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, and that shows, because there were three books this year, so you're fulfilling the wants and needs of your fans, which is great. And I know when we were speaking about putting together this interview, you were just getting married as well, so congratulations. So can we expect fantastic weddings in future books as well?
Weddings have featured a little bit in my books, even if they don't appear on camera, it is implied in a few of them. But my very favourite one was the royal wedding in Royal Romance. It was good fun to write the sheer madness that takes over the nation when there's a royal wedding. People sleeping out for days to get the best spots, and reporters interviewing people in weird outfits and hats along the route. That was quite good fun.
yeah, I imagine. I actually remember doing that for Charles and Diana's wedding. I was very little, but my parents took us to Fleet Street, and we slept on the pavement. Can you imagine?
Wow.
And they're not even huge royalists. It's always baffled me, but I have very vague memories of it. So yeah, that was. Have you ever done it?
No. It just seems to be something that takes over the nation, doesn't it? I think if I was down in England, if I was nearer, I would probably go along and see, because it's a spectacle, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, definitely.
Stephen, it's just a spectacle.
Yeah. Although I didn't do it for William and Kate, so I went to the pub and enjoyed the day off, so that was all right. I don't think we're getting a day off for Harry and Meghan, are we?
No, I don't think so, no.
No, shame. As you've already said to me, told me where you write and how you write, have you ever thought about, because obviously when you said you had your back issues, you were laid up on your back. Did you do...
Yeah.
Consider dictation when you were in that sort of capacity?
I have tried dictation, but for some reason I don't know, the story doesn't seem to come out as well as it does when I type. Mm-hmm. It just seems to flow when I type, so I have tried it a few times, but it doesn't really work for me.
Okay, yeah. It's something I keep thinking about, because everyone keeps saying, you can get so much more done, but I think I'm the same as you. It's like I quite like the physical act of typing, hearing the keys and feeling them under your fingers.
And as well as that, all the different voice recognition devices have a big problem with the Scottish accent.
Ah, yes. I imagine that might be an issue, yeah. Maybe in a couple of years' time they'll work on accents, yeah. Yeah. So what's your typical writing day? Do you always write in the mornings?
Yes, I try and always get it out of the way in the morning. Then I can relax. Especially as I'm writing to a deadline, I find it quite stressful. So I like to get it done out the way, and then I know I don't have to worry for the rest of the day, and I can go on to other things.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah, and do you do a lot of other stuff? Obviously, with you having a publisher, you do a lot of marketing yourself?
I do the social media. That's about all, and I'm not even terribly good at that. I'm quite a quiet person, so being on social media and promoting yourself doesn't exactly come naturally to me, but I do try my best.
Yeah, I think that's a common thing with writers. We're quite insular, quite like to stay at home. just blame your Wi-Fi signal. That's what I'd do. And obviously, you type straight onto a laptop, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah. And do you have any mantras in your writing process? Anything stuck on your wall to sort of get you G'd up?
Not really. What really gets me going is my writing playlists. I have a playlist for every single book.
And
when I start in the morning, get my coffee and turn on my playlist for that particular book, it gets me into that world and off I go.
Oh,
that really helps me.
Oh, that's a good tip, actually. I've heard that before. Some people light a candle or put on a certain scent or a playlist. Yeah, that's maybe I should try that. And do you tailor it for each book specifically, do you?
Yes, uh-huh.
Oh.
My paranormal books, all the music's quite dark.
Yeah.
It gets you into the world, you know.
Yeah. And what are you playing at the moment for your writing, your royal romance? What's the first song on your playlist?
I'm trying to think of who wrote it. She's So Lovely. I'm trying to remember who wrote it.
She's So Lovely, that one.
Scouting for Girls. That's the very first one.
Right.
On the playlist.
There you go. I knew my background as a music journalist would come in handy in the end. And do you have a favourite and least favourite thing about writing?
I think research is my favourite. I love learning and finding out new things, and you get to research subjects, the strangest of subjects, when you're writing, that you would normally need to know anything about, or a particular city you've never been to. I think that's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
The least favourite thing comes after the research, and that's writing to the deadline. I really get really stressed out about that. But once that's done and out of the way, I can relax, and I really enjoy editing, which I know a lot of other writers don't enjoy, but I quite like it.
Okay, so you don't like the first draft process?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, so I'm the opposite. I love the first draft, and then I dislike the editing, but I know it has to be done. So
yeah, it does.
And what's the best piece of writing advice you've ever been given?
There's so many things. Every book I learn something new, and I think I try the patience of my editor Ruth during each edit. The main one that always sticks in my head, I'm not exactly sure where, if I saw it online, but it was not to read reviews. I'm a very sensitive person, and at the beginning I did, and it's very easy to take bad reviews to heart. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of writers that get bogged down in them, that mm-hmm. affect their writing.
Mm-hmm.
And once you stop reading them, it's quite freeing. It's just your writing, and those readers that email you, and they're not always positive. Some people email you with constructive criticism, and that's really good as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a very good piece of advice. And just take yourself away from the reviews and social media sometimes, because it's not always good for you, is it?
No.
No, very good. And final question, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Jane Austen and Agatha Christie. They're my two favourites. I was just... All my youth was brought up of watching Jane Austen's and Agatha Christie's, reading Agatha Christie's. I love her books.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of romance with a murder, I think.
Yeah.
And
all set in a Scottish castle, I hope.
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect.
There you go. So can we expect a bit of Jane Austen crossed with Agatha Christie in a Scottish castle from you anytime soon?
That's a good idea.
There you go. You can have that one on me. seriously though, do you think you'd run down the path of crime, or are you sticking with romance?
You know, I would really love to. I do love crime novels, but I would think it's a very difficult thing to do. To all the plot twists and turns, I think it would be a big undertaking to do a crime novel.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Because I quite like it as well, but I've been pondering it, but I think, it's a lot to learn. So, but you never say never, eh?
No, never say never.
Okay, well, this has been great, Jenny. Thank you so much for taking the time. And good luck with all your future releases coming up, and good luck with the deadline on The Royal Romance, which is out next January, right? Is that?
Yes.
January 2019, but your next one's out in April.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much.
Brilliant, thank you.
Thank you.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, the London Romance series, the All I Want series, Nothing to Lose, Twice in a Lifetime, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk Or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, Bella Books, Barnes & Noble, or any of the other digital outlets. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon. I'm on Facebook, Claire.Lydon, and I'm on Instagram at ClaireFix, so come on down and follow me there. Plus, if you like a free lesbian romance, sign up to my VIP Readers Club and I'll send you one for free, because I'm a generous soul. Just go to www.clairelydon.co.uk and put your email address in the box at the top of the page. Thank you very much to Denise for producing this podcast. It's much appreciated, and make sure you tune in to The Lesbian Lounge for all the other great shows on there. Join me next month for more hot book club action, when I'll be interviewing Zara Wood about the upcoming Elcon Literary Festival in August in Bristol. See you then.